Welcome to Acorn to Oak with Penny Quayle Pierce and co-host Matthew Donaghy. Within each acorn, there is the DNA that strives to be a mighty oak tree. All it needs to reach its potential for greatness is to be activated. You are the acorn. On this show, we will share with you the tools and guidance you need to grow into the person you are meant to be. And now your host, Penny Quayle Pierce and co-host Matthew Donaghy.
Hi, good evening. Hi, it's Penny. Hope you're doing well on this Thursday afternoon or evening, depending where you are in the world. And just handing over to Matthew so he can say hi.
Hey, everybody. I hope you're all well. Really looking forward to tonight's show. I hope everybody is well.
Okay, so what we're going to be discussing today, more than anything else, is emotional intelligence. And obviously, you know, there's some big buzzwords around emotional intelligence, EQ, and various other bits and pieces. But an awful lot of it has some real good basic common sense in there. But it really, from my point of view, and I don't know about Matthew's, but from my point of view, it doesn't quite talk about the whole story. So it's very much a case of looking at it, and I hope that the discussion this evening is really going to help you look at. We've identified 12 qualities of an emotionally intelligent person, but you know, again, as I said, some of it is very, very superficial, and some of it we would like to introduce or discuss some of the deeper topics which need to be covered when you're talking about emotional intelligence. So is there anything that you would like to add there, Matthew, right here, right now?
No. I think obviously you've mentioned there's I know very much within the American corporate world, there's a lot of work around emotional IQ at the moment. That seems to be a very big buzz. Starting to seep through in England as well, and obviously there's a lot of terms used for what we would class as emotional intelligence, and expanding your emotional intelligence.
I think very much it's you know, again, and we don't want to teach people, you know, people who know this stuff how to suck eggs, because it, you know, there's nothing more frustrating than having somebody where, you know, but hopefully during this radio show we'll be able to bring some points that maybe you hadn't thought of before, and you know, with our unique style and a little bit of tongue-in-cheek and fun as well. You know, one of the first things I think that comes into my mind when I'm talking about emotionally intelligent people is that, you know, they're the type of people who can actually empathize with other people. And it's really important. Obviously, empathy is a really important quality to have in your life. And I think, you know, very much from my nursing background, you know, we always used to have a saying of there but the grace of God go I. In other words, trying to teach ourselves how to be empathetic, but also to have patience with people when they're in distress. Because obviously, they, you know, they were hitting my realm, especially because I worked in trauma and intensive care. You know, people do have very stressful times in their lives, and it's really important to, you know, put yourself in somebody else's position so that you gain empathy and you gain patience to help them deal with whatever stresses are going on in their lives. But also one of the other aspects of this is having empathy for self. You know, we are our own worst critics. We can be the harshest critics of ourselves. You know, nobody else would have the negative thought forms that we have about ourselves. In other words, that we're not good enough, or we don't have enough patience. And actually, where am I going to get that patience from to deal with what we perceive as this idiot who's wasting my time? Or, you know, it's amazing how judgments can come up when we're dealing with people who take us out of our own comfort zones. So, you know, very much is about having that empathy for yourself, and also empathy that, you know, it is human nature to judge and look at things when they come into our senses, you know, our five senses. You know, five senses are there to collect data in order for our conscious mind to try and interpret what is going on in the outside world. And we don't see everything. We don't smell everything. We don't taste everything. We don't feel everything. So sometimes our senses can give us false data. And that's when we need the empathy towards ourselves. You know, sometimes we don't get things right, and that's okay. It's what we do with the judgment. As long as we're looking at it and learning from it, it's a very positive thing. But it's when we deny it or we resist it. You know, as we were talking last week with Adam, you know, one of his great sayings that he loves is what you resist persists. So if we're resisting our own self, then we're going to continue doing unhelpful behavior. So, you know, for me, empathy is a real big thing. To be empathetic, you need to be slightly self-aware. So it's all very well going through life, you know, and saying, oh, I've got to learn empathy and being empathetic towards myself and towards other. But unless we're actually aware of what is going on, and we've moved from the just being in survival mode, where we're actually beginning to learn about self, you know, where we start, where our own stuff starts and finishes, so we know what is other people's, we can get dragged all over the place by thinking that, you know, I'm feeling really angry because this person at work emotionally vomited on my feet first thing in the morning. And we were actually wandering around the office or the workplace going, my feet feel sticky, and not understanding that actually that was the other person who we first met in the morning who was really angry and vomited on our feet rather than dealing with their own anger. So self-awareness obviously is a key thing, so that we can actually understand where our stuff starts and our stuff finishes, and we can let the rest of the stuff going on in the outside world just let it be. So again, Matthew, I'm drawing you in on this. One, so that you can talk, but also two, so I can have a drink.
Yeah, very much so. Totally agree with what you've said. When I learnt about what empathy actually means, I found on a very personal level, it really helped me to sieve through some of the stuff I was telling myself. I was more a sympathetic person rather than an empathetic person. And I'm much more for empathy. With sympathy, I think it's real easy to buy into other people's situations and to almost jump in and try and rescue somebody when they make a statement or they talk about how they're feeling. You go into sympathy and you almost feel as though you need to jump in and rescue them and try and help them. And that sort of thing. Whereas empathy is obviously you're understanding how they're feeling and you're understanding the situation you're in, but you're not trying to jump in there and save them. You're not trying to advise them based on the sympathy that you're feeling for them. So very much with empathy, it's allowing them or giving them the power to make a decision and change their lives, rather than try and jump in with ideas and solutions that we think will help them move forwards. And within that can be ego, that we think we know what somebody else needs, when actually if you allow them the time and the space to sort of take a breath and not necessarily analyze what's going on, you're giving them the power back to change their life. I think within sympathy, it almost gives you an excuse for bad behavior and what happens to you in your daily life. So someone may turn around and say, oh well, yeah, it's okay, don't worry, it's not you, it's the work that you're in, and it's the people at work, it's their fault that you're feeling like this. And actually within that, we have a choice. We control our destiny. Everything within our lives, we hold the power to change. And I think when you're empathetic and you listen to what they say and you take it on board and you allow them to sort of speak, and this is with yourself as well. It's not giving yourself an excuse as to why your life isn't working out how you would like it to. We all have situations in our life that test us. We all have situations in our life that aren't particularly positive, but it's how we react to that. And with having the power to change it, I think empathy is a huge thing that's helped me move forwards in my life, because I used to just blame everybody else. The phrase that we have in England is, oh, well, that's life, you've just got to crack on. And it's like, actually, that's just making out that we've all got a bum deal in life and we just have to get on with it. And actually, that's not the case. We can change any situation within our own life and improve it. And that's where I found personally empathy's really, really helped me and helped me take responsibility for my behaviours that are causing not so positive things in my life. So a big one for me.
Yeah, I think that leads on really nicely to the next quality that I would say emotionally intelligent people have, and that's curiosity. There's a great Albert Einstein saying that, you know, I have no special talents, I am only passionately curious. And you look at Albert Einstein's life and, you know, what he created and the amazing discoveries he shared with the world and his own particular unique genius. And you look at it and go, wow, you know, he says he's now got no special talents, but whoa, he was a world changer. And, you know, it's very much, it showed me a curious person who's willing to learn and improve. And I'll show you a success story waiting to happen. Because you know, very much part of my life and my journey has been that I'm curious about everything. It's like, show me how it works. Yeah. You know, before I rewrote the models of health, it was like, show it to me. I want to take it apart like it was an engine. Yeah, I want to put it back together again, because, you know, my brain is the brain of a dyslexic person. So I wanted to pull it apart, smell it, taste it, look at it, you know, play with it as if it was a jigsaw puzzle, and put it back together so that if I could understand it, then I could explain it to other people. So, you know, that's where I come from. I love looking at something and going, whoa, I wonder how this works. And, you know, again, going on to the next quality, which is very much the analytic mind, you know, being the most emotionally intelligent people, you know, are resolute people who are deep thinkers. They analyze things, they process all the new information that comes their way. And in other words, in our private lives or our away from emotional intelligence just for a second, it's the people who just, again, just want to look at it. You know, savvy EQ individuals are problem solvers. So, you know, they look at the whys of existence and what do we do here? And, you know, looking at, okay, so if I want to live a virtuous life, how would that look? When would I know that I had achieved it? What's, you know, at Acorn to Oak, we talk about the bottom line. What is your bottom line? What are your values? What are your beliefs? What is your moral code? And then putting it in the in your bottom line is very much, you know, if it's not congruent with my bottom line, then I'm not going to do it. Yeah. Because it's not, you know, it's not congruent with who I am right here, right now. So an analytic mind is very, very, very important for, you know, someone who is working up to be emotionally intelligent. And again, as I was talking about just there about the bottom line, you know, it's the majority of, you know, our beliefs. Okay, maintaining emotional self-control. It's using the power of faith to believe in yourself and to believe in the present and in the future. It's believing that it can happen. If we don't have a good, strong belief system, you know, when we go to do the work of looking at what emotional intelligence means to us, personally, as well as getting guidance from a coach or whatever it is you decide to do, it, you know, the faith alone will not help you. You've got to have faith and belief, but you've also got to take action, of course, because if you don't take action, nothing will change. So we're moving into a break now. We'll see you on the other side.
Right.
Your conscious connection to a more mindful world. Om Times Radio. IOM FM. Om Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Om Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Kathy Williams, host of Sexy Mom Abundant Life radio show on Thursdays at 5 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Pacific. On the show, we explore living abundantly in every area of your life. Ways to let go of limiting patterns and beliefs and to step into the flow of creativity and possibility, knowing you are supported by the universe.
We are talking about your life. Ever wonder, is this as good as it gets? No, it could be so much better. At Acorn to Oak, we know you are seeking more happiness, joy, unconditional love, financial freedom, passion, and purpose. Find your unique mojo and live an extraordinary life. Want to know more? Contact us at our website, acorntooak.org.uk.
1 in 3 adults has prediabetes. 1 in 3. That means it could be you, your football buddy, your football buddy, or you, your best man. your worst man. You, your dog walker, your cat jogger. While one in three adults has prediabetes, with early diagnosis, prediabetes can be reversed. Take the risk test at doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its prediabetes awareness partners.
So we were, just before the break, we were talking about faith. And, you know, if you combine faith with powerful values like hard work, perseverance, a positive mindset, you've formed a foundation of a champion. Every great leader and thinker uses faith, either in a practical context or emotional, and certainly in the spiritual context. You know, meditation obviously is going to help you ground that belief system into your bottom line. And, you know, trust and belief will bring the pieces of your life together in a way which will help you live boldly and joyfully. So, again, handing over to Matthew to get his thoughts on this.
Yeah, I think just before the break, something you said brought up something for me, and that's my favorite quote again from Albert Einstein, and that is, insanity is doing the same thing and expecting a different result. So how many times are you going to run at a wall and bang your head before you look to the left and realize there's a door? And just to quote some of the, I've watched a very interesting documentary on Steve Jobs and actually some other great minds of the world, and they will tell you that a lot of the ideas and the what, especially with Steve Jobs, what he created in his lifetime was down to meditation, and that is very much like you said, having the faith in something that is larger than ourselves. And when you take action and you have focus, actually you can create things that are way beyond a human intelligence, for want of a better expression. Many sort of inspirational speakers and that will say that when they get up on stage, they don't actually know what they're going to talk about, but they give it up, and what comes through comes through. So meditation has been great for me in my life, and I think having that faith. And also, it's like very much like you said, you do have to put in the effort. It's the perseverance and the positive attitude that do give you a foundation, and you can bring so much more love and joy into your life through expression and growing yourself. And I think it's that trust and that belief in something, but also not leaving it up to anybody else. So you're putting in the effort, you're putting in the time, and it doesn't mean you need to work yourself to the bone. In sometimes it can actually come real easy. When you have a belief and a focus, you can find that things actually really, really flow. And that just builds the faith within self. So that's certainly what it brought up for me. Very much going on to one of the other ones, needs and wants. In meditation, we can let go of personal wants and connect with what we truly need and what others need, and gives you a very much a greater understanding of self and others.
That's too true. I really do agree with that. And it's, you know, again, at Acorn to Woke, we try and get away from using the word wants, because if you want something, you're just going to keep on wanting it. You'll never actually gain it because you know, the universe will hear the word want and they'll say, you can want as much as you like. It's you know, it's lessening those, you know, ego-driven words to something that is actually, it's my preference to have so-and-so, or even up to a desire. I would desire to have this experience in my life, you know. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, it's going to the things that are nice to have rather than I want this. My life is never going to be what I want it to be unless I have the big car, the big house, the, you know, the whatevers. Whereas in actually for fact, you know, when you go back to Maslow's hierarchy of needs, you know, being somebody who's worked in education quite a long time in my life, it's going back to those basic needs. What are the basic needs? What are your authentic needs? And then building from there and realizing the authentic needs at the beginning is housing and food and warmth and all of those types of things. But, you know, in many indigenous people, you know, again, in the West, we expect or our wants and our needs are much bigger than living in an indigenous tribe. So basically, we just need food, water, warmth, and rest. It's nice to have security and safety. You know, it's nice to have intimate relationships and friends. And actually, in indigenous tribes, they have an abundance of that. And then, you know, obviously, prestige and a feeling of an accomplishment is nice. And then obviously self-actualization, achieving one's full potential, is where we would all like to be. But, you know, it's really important for us to realize that in the West, we take these for granted. In many other countries and cultures, absolutely, they don't have, you know, they're very much down on the bottom two levels, the psychological needs and the safety needs. And we forget how lucky we are and how amazing, you know, to live in the West and to live in countries that help and support us get those needs met. So, mm-hmm. you know, one that you may suddenly realise for both Matthew and I, you know, we have this equality in abundance, and that's passion. It's being passionate. Yes. It's being, you know, inspired leadership, love of what you do. You know, you've been born to do it. And I was giving a talk on Sunday to at a place in the UK called Highcliffe Castle, which was an amazing castle. And in this really vaulted room, giving a talk to people about why is this happening to me again? And I was just basically standing there, and at one stage to them, you know, was talking about soul and where your soul sings. And I was saying, you know, what do you think is happening right now, right here, right now? And, you know, a couple of people just shouted out, your soul is singing. And I went, yes, you're right. I'm here. I'm doing what makes my soul sing. I'm here talking to you about levels of consciousness and two states of being. And, you know, again, you know, emotionally intelligent people, you know, basically they use their passion and purpose to ignite the engine that drives them to do what they do. You know, their passion is infectious and contagious, and it permeates all areas of their life, and it rubs off on the people who are around them. You know, just even walking down the road, you know, I get into some conversations, you know, or doing the shopping, going to the supermarket or whatever it is, you know, people know and are drawn to you, and they want to talk to you, or they want to connect in some way because they know that you are emotionally intelligent, or they get it on an energetic level, and it's just they're absolutely drawn to it, because people love to be around people who are living their, you know, their soul purpose. So again, moving through, it's, you know, for me, it's very much all in a web weave, you know, it's like a tapestry which is woven with amazing colours. You know, another value is optimism, being optimistic. You know, wanting to increase your opportunities, improve your relationships, think clearly and constructively. You know, you maintain the best position, you know, i.e. you're using positive thoughts. Doesn't mean that you totally ignore the negative ones. They need to be clocked, but then transmuted into something of higher vibration. So it's a way of, you know, really being a positive influence and having an attitude that you are in control of your life. You are the space between you and your emotional response. So it's not that you're in control of your emotions, your feelings are your friends. And so it's that simple. And it's really important to realize that. So I'm going to rant on for just another couple of seconds and talk about being adaptable. So adaptability is really important too. It's the power of resistance and assimilation. You know, that's something that Mahatma Gandhi used to talk about. Emotionally intelligent people recognize when they continue their course and when it's time for a change. In other words, it's about little adjustments as you're going through life. And it's really important to be able to stop, look, listen, and change. And it is that flexibility and adaptability which enables you to change course. You know, if we took off from the moon, you know, not from the moon, I'm going mad here. If we took off from the Earth and stuck on the same course, you know, we're heading towards the moon, we'd miss the moon by about 1,000 miles. You need to do, you know, all the astronauts. I'm pretending I'm an astronaut here, being beacon. But, you know, you need to course adjust all the way, to the moon. Course adjust, course adjust, course adjust. So, you know, it's not the one thing that stops us doing that is fear that we may make a wrong turn, or, you know, the adjustment won't be in our favor. It's just learning to make the change or make a change when the old route is not suiting you anymore. And accepting that change is a natural part of our lives, and it's something that will happen or we need to do and need to look at every day of our lives. And, you know, once you do that, once you recognize you can change, it will be absolutely, you know, this is where the energy turns into flow, and it's really easy. Mm-hmm. Because you're not stuck in a rut. You're not this, I've got to stick to this route, or my life will explode, or some such thought form. So it's really important to, you know, to realize that, you know, on Earth, right here, right now, we're going to be affected by change. So handing back to Matthew for his thoughts on this before we rapidly go into a break.
Yeah, I think just to tie in some of that, very much being optimistic, it's having that mindset where you're not expecting a certain outcome. So there's sayings like, do you live with a cup half empty or half full? Now, within Acorn to Oak, fear to us is false evidence appearing real. Now, if you weren't optimistic and you were making a decision out of fear, you're assuming this certain outcome is going to happen, whereas being optimistic is, it's obviously hoping for the best but expecting anything. If you're living in fear, It's if we all lived in fear, we wouldn't leave our beds in the morning because we could walk out of the front door and any number of sort of unpositive experiences could happen. But being optimistic, it's living a different way and being excited about it, that anything could happen. If you're living in fear, it's very much assuming the worst is going to happen. So obviously false evidence appearing real, we can convince ourselves that something bad is going to happen, and the chances are it will, because we manifest everything within our lives. So being optimistic is a real, real important thing. It's not assuming that everything is going to turn out the way that it did when you last tried it. Very much tying in with the adaptability, with the course adjustments. It's we can always make an adjustment. So if you had an experience, whether it be personal or within business, that didn't have the exact outcome that you wanted in the, or you prefer in the first place, you can adjust. Everything can always be adjusted or slightly adapted. So we almost need to see life as a game. And adapt to that mindset, because we're here to have fun. We're here to experience any number of amazing things. We're not here to do what we were taught at school. Very much in England, it was, well, you study hard and you get good grades, and then you'll get the job that you want. And by 23, you're married and you've got 2.4 children, and then you live happily ever after. And that's great for the 0.1% of people that have that experience. But for the rest of us that don't have that experience, you see it as something, as a negative experience, and just go, oh, well, yeah, that's how life's going to turn out. That's life for me. Rather than adapt slightly and change the way that you're thinking about a situation, and not always assuming that you're going to succeed. But I love the saying, if you don't win, you learn, because there is no losing here. You're either going to have a successful and positive experience, or there's going to be a lesson in there. And often the lesson is around the adaptability. Acorn to Oak, we promote reflection. So it's what was good, what was the situation, and what happened. What was good about it? What was not so good about it? What would you do differently next time? And what's the lesson and learning? And through that reflection or into reflection, we can adapt how we act, how we think, to produce a better result next time. And again, it's something we teach and we're very passionate about, because reflection and adaptability is a key. Great tool.
So here's the break.
Yep, going into another break, so we'll see you after this. Thank you very much.
A conscious lifestyle for a mindful life. Om Times Radio, IOM FM. Being a radio host on IOM FM allows you to build your show on a rich platform with the power of the internet to fulfill your outreach goals and connect with a very specialized and global online audience, unlimited by time and distance. Om Times Radio will provide you with web relevance, a recognizable conscious brand, and with the standard of excellence that has accompanied every single Om Times endeavor. Host your show with Om Times Radio Network.
Hello, I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, host of Om Times Magazine's flagship radio show, What Is Going On? My passion is sifting through information, research, and innovations from New Thought teachers, speakers, and researchers, pushing back the boundaries of what we know about life, energy, metaphysics, and the universe. I love shifting perceptions about who we are, why we're here, and how quickly impossible becomes normal when we open our minds, expand our awareness, and accept that the only limits that exist are those we place upon ourselves. So if you're the kind of forward-thinking, eager investigator of what lies beyond the current reality that most perceive, Why not make a date to come play with me in the Field of Possibilities at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Eastern Time every Thursday, and together we can discover what's really going on.
We are talking about your life. Ever wonder, is this as good as it gets? No, it could be so much better. At Acorn to Oak, we know you are seeking more happiness, joy, unconditional love, financial freedom, passion, and purpose. Find your unique mojo and live an extraordinary life. Want to know more? Contact us at our website, acorntooak.org.uk.
Long ago, you wouldn't think of galloping on a horse while doing calligraphy, and you wouldn't have attempted to ride your bike while typing a letter. Yet you think you can safely operate a multi-ton vehicle while texting? Behind the wheel is no place to multitask. If you want to BRB, drive now and text later. Lives depend on it.
Visit StopTextStopWrecks.org, a message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, Noise, and the Ad Council.
Hi, so we're back from the break. Good to be back. So looking again, we'll be talking about emotional intelligence. So the next point we'd like to discuss is emotional awareness and knowledge. So again, you know, it's having a framework in which to work in. And at Acorn to Oak, we basically talk about there are four emotions. Mad, which is anything from being vaguely cheesed off or slightly irritable, to absolute anger and rage, good old red rage, where, you know, we're just about to blow our tops. But rage also can be divided into two. It can be red rage, which we all recognise when someone's really angry and they get loud and yell, and also the icy cold blue rage. And the icy cold blue rage is, it's a real dangerous rage. It's, you know, I would say it's the rage of a mass murderer who basically will just, you know, stick you in the heart with a knife and walk away and not, is so numbed out to their own feelings because it's icy cold blue rage that there is no remorse whatsoever. So that's, you know, and every emotion, you know, every level of emotion right the way through that mad strain. Then you've got sad, anything from being mildly disappointed that they haven't got your favourite ice cream in the local shop to absolute catatonic grief. So disappointment, all of those different emotions all the way through that line. And then obviously glad, which is everything, anything from being good, I feel good today, and to absolute bliss. Cooking on gas, you know, singing, dancing, being in bliss, totally connected, I would say, totally connected to your authentic self. And scared, anything from being mildly anxious, to absolute terror. And, you know, it goes obviously from the, you know, the lesser emotion right the way through to the most intense emotion along those four strains. And, you know, at Acorn to Oak, we use this tool on a daily basis, you know, just to check in with people and see how they're feeling, because it takes them away from having to say why. We just say, how are you doing? Mad, sad, glad, scared. Where are you at? And because one of the things is feelings are our friends, but emotion, energy, emotion means that an emotion should come into our energy fields and leave. The trouble is we get e-stuck, and e-stuck means that the emotion comes in, it rattles around, it does 10 backflips, a couple of, you know, rolls, and basically then you shove it into a container or a bucket and you suppress it. And when you suppress it, you're just getting rid of it so you don't have to feel it and you don't have to feel the pain of it. And in different situations, we just skip over different emotions that we don't want to deal with or at the time, or it's not appropriate to deal with at the time. But what we don't do afterwards is to reflect, as Matthew was talking about, and get out what was going on during the day and saying what was good, what was not so good, you know, what happened, what was not so good, you know, what would we do different next time, and what was the lesson and what did we learn from? Because if we went through that process on a daily basis, we'd know we had suppressed emotions and we needed to bring them out and get them from being stuck back into an emotional response so that we can let them go. And that's something that we just don't do on a daily basis.
Yeah, I think a really good example of that is, how many of you find yourself having a situation in the morning where somebody sort of said something that you may not necessarily like, and it could bring up any of the four main feelings. And because in that moment you didn't deal with the emotion and you suppressed it, 7-8 o'clock in the evening, you'll be stood there cooking a meal in your kitchen. You go, I wish I had said that to them. How dare they say that to them? And I feel like this, and I wish I had said that. And you almost feel as though you need to bang them to rights because they've made you feel a certain way. Whereas actually, on reflection, no one's out to really hurt. Nobody wants to hurt anybody emotionally. So had you have dealt with that emotion in the morning with reflection, it wouldn't be coming back at you and coming back at you and coming back at you. It's only because we don't deal with the emotion in that moment that it just rattles around, and it's like having a bouncy ball going around your head. You're thinking of what you could say, what you could do, and I should have done that, and how dare they? And we make it personal rather than just reflecting and dealing with the emotion in that moment.
Yeah, so this is when, you go again, the next point is being aware of what is in your subconscious. You know, again, I was giving a talk, which I mentioned earlier on Sunday, and I was talking to a whole bunch of people about three states, three levels of consciousness. And, you know, it was amazing to watch, you know, when you're giving a live talk, it's really interesting to watch people's eyes and where they put their hands and what their body language is when you start talking about something they didn't even realize existed. And it's really interesting to when you look at the three states of consciousness, obviously the conscious mind being 10%, it is our waking consciousness. It's where the ego is, it's where the personality is, it's where our fight and flight is. And the subconscious is like a warehouse. And that warehouse is divided pretty much into two main bits, which is skills. And I've talked about this before, skills where we park all the skills like driving a car and our job-related stuff and how we pay our taxes and all that type of stuff in the subconscious. So we bring that knowledge and those skills out when we need them. And the other 20%, again, can literally be divided into two. So you've got 10% of... some of the suppressions, some of the trauma, some of the past earlier lifetime experiences that were not great in one section. And in the other section, you have joy, bliss, spontaneity, and all sorts of things that we suppressed when we were a child because it wasn't appropriate to feel them at the time. You know, children are seen and not heard. So that's very much being aware of what's going on in the subconscious. And in the subconscious, in that 20% of clutter and joyful experiences, there is gold, absolute gold, that we didn't know we had. There are also some experiences and traumas, etc., that we need to clear in order to become unstuck, so that the e-stuckness goes and the emotion is free to leave. So it's really important to get all of those things and realize how emotional intelligence actually affects us. The last thing that I would like to talk about is, you know, the desire to help others succeed and succeed for yourself. That is one of the qualities of an emotionally intelligent person. And it's, you know, it's really important that it, you know, they're not just wanting overall success and achievement for themselves, but also their peers. They are inspired leaders, and they're passionate, and combined with their optimism and their drives, wanting others to be the best they can be, as well as themselves. And, you know, all too often we get so self-absorbed with what's in it for me syndrome. And, you know, basically we need to realize that all of us are here in a global community in order to help each other achieve your own brilliance. And, you know, sometimes we, you know, in Australia, they call it the tall poppy syndrome. They, you know, as soon as somebody gets too big, they're, you know, the general public start harboring it, you know, harboring them or harassing them, or should I say, and trying to chop them down, because they don't want, you know, there's this overall syndrome sometimes over in Australia where they just don't want anybody to get too big. That's much, obviously, in the United States, is not the culture in the United States. Everybody actually says good for you and tries to help others achieve greatness as well as themselves. And in the UK, I look at the UK as being quite balanced on this one. You know, sometimes you get the people who are feel really quite jealous about other people succeeding, and other people, it's good for you. You get much more balance, I think, in the UK with this. So yeah. I just wanted to hand it back to Matthew so we can get some of his thoughts and gold on this, and I'll be quiet for a minute.
Yeah, I think for me, the real important point I'd like to get across to people is, a lot of people say to me, well, why is emotional intelligence so important? Why do you have such a great passion for it? And it's because from a personal level, you can deal with a lot of traumas that you've experienced. You can grow yourself, and through growing yourself, you can help others. But the point I put to them is, if your physical health was suffering, what would you do? You go to the gym, you perhaps start walking, you'd make sure your nutrition was improved and that sort of thing. So we know as human beings that we can improve our physical health by physical exercise. The huge issue around mental health issues, and I'm not sure about America, but very much in England, there's a huge push at the moment for mental health awareness. Because so many people are suffering from what is called by the medical profession mental illness. From my point of view, I prefer the term emotional imbalance, because unless you're aware of your emotional state and they cannot suppress any more anger, because they've suppressed so much anger within their life. So it basically spills out in a huge emotional vomit. Now you ask two guys that just had a tear up in the street and say, well, what actually happened? And they say, well, he said something that I didn't like, and then so I said this, and they end up in a full-on fight. And you ask them afterwards, well, why was the fight relevant to the situation? And they said, well, no, but I just saw red. And it's where they try and suppress the anger and it just bounces straight back up and comes out. So for me, the emotional intelligence work is so important to get the message out there that actually, if you're not happy in your life, if things aren't running the way that you would like, there is a gym for emotional intelligence, and that gym is Acorn to Oak. We have many practitioners and lots of people that have been through a huge amount of different situations that can help you understand your own emotional intelligence and become emotionally healthy, just the same as you can with the gym. And it's something that we've ignored for years and years and years. A lot of people say, oh, well, if you want to feel good, then you just go to the gym and you get physically fit and that gives you the rush. But it's just as important as physical.
Yeah, so coming to a close now, thank you so much for listening. I hope you got something really from it, and you know, by all means, you know, get in contact with us at Acorn to Oak if you have any questions. Take care and have a great week.
Thank you very much.